All right.
Wake up with Sarah and Vinny.
They're great. They're awesome every morning.
Every morning on Alice 97.3.
Alice 97.3, Sarah and Vinny, Alice's morning show. Jumpstart MD is our sponsor. If you want to get in shape this summer, start your weight loss journey with Jumpstart MD. Mention Alice and save up to 70% in June. Call 855-JUMPSTART or visit jumpstartmd.com. All right. We have a very special guest here in the studio with us. This is introducing to our audience crappy childhood fairy Anna Runkel.
Hello.
I stumble over that name every time, Anna, because when you put crappy in first position, it makes it sound like you're crappy, but you're talking about people's crappy childhood.
It was the crappy childhood.
Okay.
And I'm the fairy of that.
You are.
Yeah.
So you kind of got on our radar because a situation has arisen where you're a person on the internet, like so many other people. You give advice to people, you talk some tough love, and you've never said, is this true? You've never claimed to be a licensed psychologist or a psychiatrist.
Not only don't I claim it, but everything I do has a disclaimer. I'm not a therapist. If you need a therapist, you got to go to a therapist.
Right. So how did we get into this mess where you're suing, they're suing? What is happening here?
Well, almost 2 years ago, I got this weird letter, and I thought it was a phishing scam.
Mm-hmm.
It was on this
weird— In the mail.
In it, certified mail. I'm like, what's going on? You know, that's usually not ever good.
No.
And it was a letter that said, you have to stop operating. You're practicing therapy without a license. You're claiming that you cure PTSD, that you treat people, and you have to stop everything and pay a fine. And I thought, obviously a scam, because anybody knows that's not what I do. I mean, crappy childhood fairy. Does it sound like I'm impersonating a therapist?
Well, let me ask you, though. So that was sent to you by whom?
It was sent by the California Board of Psychology.
That's wild.
Yeah. And so there's a couple dozen of these boards for licensing, and they're governed by the Department of Consumer Affairs. I think that's who first sent it. They sent an investigator to my house. She said, oh, this sounds great. She took home a bunch of my handouts. You know, she just liked it. And then I thought I was fine. And then a year later, I get another letter. And this time they're like, yeah, you have to stop. And so I thought, I guess I got to get a lawyer. And I got a lawyer. They're like, oh, yeah, they do this. But there's no way this will go anywhere because it's so crazy.
Right.
Next thing you know, two hearings later.
Full-on court hearings.
Well, this is administrative court.
Okay.
And it's very interesting. A lot of people think these courts should be abolished. You have no due process rights. They have no obligation to tell you exactly what you did wrong or what they would like you to fix. And you don't have a right to express yourself. I had to sit there for 2 days in a Zoom meeting with all these guys just making 100 accusations from, you're a grifter, you claim to be a fairy, you're a fraud.
Wow.
And I had no right to defend myself.
And oh, so, my God.
Yeah, I had a lawyer who sort of vaguely understood what I did. You know, this is a very low-level court. And they had an expert witness who went in there, and of the four things he accused me of, it was like, you speak with authority, you charge money to coach people, which is part of my business. Most of my business is free. But if it was all paid, I still have a right to do that.
Right.
Coaching is legal.
Yes.
Expressing yourself is legal.
Life coaches. Any manner that you want to is completely legal.
Yeah.
Does it feel like, and sorry to the Karens of the world for the reference, but does it feel like one person got it this up there, you know, and then just started pursuing you?
Yeah. Well, it all started with a complaint. I finally saw it last fall. I mean, you know, a year and a half go by before I know anything about what is this even about.
How did it start?
So somebody had come. I do these very large free Zoom calls. I teach a technique for how to write out your tough feelings, then meditate afterwards. And it works really well, but it's very specific how to do it. So I was up there all the time teaching on Zoom calls. Hundreds of people would come from all over the world.
And these are free.
And they're free.
You're just a woman who has been through whatever you've been through in your life, and you're offering your experiences to others.
I'm somebody who grew up in a commune in Berkeley.
Oh my God.
Radical.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Everybody was on drugs and having sex on the floor, and it was not good for kids.
Really?
Your parents lived there with you, or was it one single parent?
My mom, my parents got divorced when I was 7, and then the whole thing went crazy.
So your mom joined the commune, and you just...
She formed the commune.
Oh, she did. Oh, goodness.
Now, you think commune, and you think, oh, peace, love, ideals. It was like drugs and sex and craziness.
Mm.
So it was...
And you're a 7-year-old.
I was, yeah, seven to nine while we lived there, and...
Yikes.
It was... Yeah.
It's a crappy childhood.
There wasn't food, you know. There was just drugs everywhere. There was violence going on. And in those days, they didn't call CPS or anything like that. Mm. And so luckily, I was very deft at finding moms and teachers and be like, hey, could I stay at your house tonight? It's pretty hectic at my house. And people would just quietly help me out. So that was, yeah.
Wow.
That was a survival skill. So I thought I sort of coasted through it. But long about my late 20s, I got my heart broken. My mom died. And then I got randomly assaulted on the street. It's just like out of the blue, very violently. Broke my jaw, my teeth, and unconscious, bad concussion. And I would say I had PTSD. But this was 1994. They just thought of PTSD as something soldiers get.
Right.
And they were like, here, take some Xanax and go to therapy 3 times a week. And those are like 2 really bad things to do when you've had a terrible trauma. Is just like first go talk about the trauma endlessly and then take drugs to try to cope with how
the
much
the drug
it
thing
screws
is,
you up.
Is yeah. I went when I was trying to quit drinking and I was like, I got a real, and I told the therapist all the stuff. And she said, it sounds like you're going through a real rough patch. And I was like, yeah, I'd say. And she's like, well, I'm going to prescribe. And I went, I know you're not listening to me at all.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble with this avoidance thing. I'm not dealing with my life. I don't want drugs. And she was like, well, that's. And I just went, okay, this is not the right person for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have to go to someone else.
Yeah.
Find someone else that will help you in a way that you feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, therapy, I'm one of the people. It turns out like statistically maybe a third of people who had early trauma, it does something to your nervous system and your brain where you might have a lot of good coping skills, but under stress, you'll start to kind of glitch, you know, overreact, space out, you know, start to get discombobulated, make really bad decisions. I didn't learn that until this book came out in 2014, The Body Keeps the Score. It was a book that influenced a lot of people, but I happened to read it. And it said, this is called complex PTSD. It comes from a lot of chronic ongoing stress. It has a classic cluster of symptoms. And I was like, oh my God,
I finally found it.
Somebody has explained it. And it has this key feature called dysregulation, which now people know that word.
I don't know it.
Oh, well.
Tell me.
I'm going to leave you with a book. I wrote a book called Reregulated. That's like the story
of how you figured out your dysregulation. Yeah. Okay, tell me.
Yeah, but it's your nervous system is this beautiful system that regulates you, and it runs your hormones, your immune system, your ability to have cognition, to be perceptive, to read the room, to tell when something is safe or positive or a great idea. Your nervous system
or not.
Is like doing all this for you. But if you got neglected, neglect is really as harmful as like physical abuse, any kind of abuse, it can cause you to sort of glitch out on those functions. And so you see these huge correlations. People who were, you know, went through trauma as kids have extremely high rates of chronic disease, not just depression, anxiety, you know, addiction, things that you would expect, but like they have a higher rate of cancer, dementia, heart disease, hypertension. And then also...
Hence the title. What's the title of the book again?
That Reregulated.
The body...
The body keeps the score.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a popular idea out there now that... I think this is a metaphor, frankly, but it's that your body holds on to the trauma. Your body gets slammed by the trauma. It's a lot of hormones. It's a lot of like malfunctioning. It changes how your capillaries function. So you get sick easier. It's harder to heal wounds. And so if... Like I had a surgery once when I was... Like at a really bad time, I had just gotten divorced. I had 2 little kids. Everything was terrible. I had no money and I couldn't heal from the surgery. I ended up having 14 surgeries trying to fix that surgery.
Jesus.
And they kept going, why is this happening? And finally I had answers. It's like, because when I'm under stress, my history of trauma makes my body not work very well. But when I know how to re-regulate, my body does work really well. And so does my mind. And so does my ability to make decisions and my ability to be loving when I want to be loving and present when I want to be present. And to even have a choice.
The bottom line here is you are a person who's been through it.
Yeah.
You have found things that have helped you cope. And in an effort to help other people find their own ways to cope, and whether it's through your methods or just you're the first step, you're not telling them that you're a therapist or a psychologist.
Yeah.
Now you've found yourself in trouble with this sort of low-level administrative court? Is that what you called it?
That we're done with them now. They ruled against me. They listened, to everything, and they just said what they were going to say anyway. At this level of court, it doesn't matter if the judge... I have no right to know what the judge ruled. It doesn't matter what the judge ruled. They can still do whatever they want.
So what did they want you to do once they made this decision?
Well, initially they wanted me to stop everything, but they became aware, I think, somewhere in the hearing, like, oh, there's the First Amendment, and on YouTube, they can't touch my YouTube or my books. And they called it my website, and they said content. They didn't seem to really understand, like, the present media environment. Initially, they're like, you're doing therapy on YouTube. I'm like, have you seen YouTube? Do you know what it is? Like, you couldn't do that if you wanted to.
It's not a Zoom.
It's not two-way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, but then they zeroed in. I do coaching, and I can't now. I'm now prohibited.
You did coaching is what you're
saying. I did coaching. People could pay me to come be in a small group or come talk. It's really like a consult. I would only do one-offs. I'm not interested in seeing somebody every week. It's not that structured. They'll be like, look, I have this relationship. What do you think I should do? And you go, you want to know what I think you should do? I think you should do this. So I got that. So I've for 32 years, and a girl named Rachel here from San Francisco, she saved my life after that assault. And I was honestly about to, do myself in. I was so hopeless. I was getting worse and worse. And she said, do you want to try this thing? And she learned it from this one guy named Tom in AA. I'm not in AA. I don't have that problem, even though everybody in my family did. But I might as well have, because the way I was functioning was that serious. And she just showed me how to do this writing. She said, go learn meditation. And within 2 weeks, I would say I wasn't depressed anymore. I didn't have PTSD symptoms anymore.
Just using this method.
I just had this like shitty life.
Oh, you can't say that. No.
Dump it.
No S word.
It's okay.
Yep.
We're talking a crappy childhood fairy.
Yep. Anna Runkle.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I have a question before we move forward.
Yep.
You mentioned your mom had passed away.
Yeah.
Did you and your mom reconcile before she passed away? It would be hard to forgive.
Yeah.
Anyone, more importantly, a parent that was supposed to have your back.
Right. The hearing that there was no food and everyone had their drugs going is heartbreaking.
Well, I did everything I could to have a relationship with her, but she was very far gone with hard drugs and alcohol.
Oh, okay.
Very far gone. She couldn't really do it. So in a weird way, it liberated me to realize, like, if I'm going to be happy and okay, I'm going to have to figure this out. Like, she's not going to ever just give
Come
me
around.
Some magic words here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So on a weekly basis, we take letters from our audience and we give them bad advice. We put the disclaimer right there, even though it's amazing advice always. So we're going to give you first crack at these. All right. I picked a couple for you.
Okay.
We're talking with Anna Runkle, the crappy childhood fairy. Your story is absolutely fascinating.
It's riveting.
All right. This one is from M. First off, you guys are awesome. So much fun every morning. Thanks for your energy. Oh shoot. This is the wrong one. This is the voluntold one. Here's the next one. This one's from S. Please don't use my name. My husband is very good looking and he works at Trader Joe's.
Mm.
I've always been very confident and tolerant about certain women hitting on him. He tells me about it. He's very sweet and I think quite monogamous. He's very kind and good to me. Here's my question. He told me about one woman who's particularly trampy. That's my words, not his. And she propositioned him and said, hey, do you want to go in the bathroom for a while? He said, no, I don't. I know this woman, and I know she's been trouble for several men there who are married. Now, it almost sounds like she might work at the Trader Joe's as well.
Yeah.
Or is she just coming in there every
day?
Sounds
like a coworker.
Yeah. Okay, so... I know this woman. I know she's been trouble for several men there who are married. Here's my question. Should I report this to management or should I just keep out of it? This woman's trouble. And honestly, I'm not sure what she's doing is fair. Thank you from a day one listener back in 1997.
Yeah. Gosh, I love Trader Joe's. I'm so sorry to hear there's trouble in paradise.
I know. It seems idyllic.
Yeah.
So
you're
we're
right,
gonna.
It does.
It doesn't. It. It's just like everybody's
Hawaiian
also,
print shirts.
Sure.
I mean, it's all good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here's the trouble. No, you can't report her to management. You don't work there. That's not cool. If he wants to, he can. It does sound like sexual harassment, but that's got to be his choice. The thing that concerned me about what she said is I think he's pretty monogamous, something
yeah.
like that, sort of an ambiguous
And I
thing.
Think quite monogamous.
I think quite monogamous. So if monogamy is what she wants, there's the red light flashing.
Because she's obviously
she
got
know.
Some kind of insecurity
yeah.
to have written this to us in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. If you trust your man or partner of any kind, then you just know they're going to get hit on by people sometimes. And it's going to happen when you're not there. And you got to have trust for that. So it sounds like there's an issue there.
I would say, and actually, let me ask it this way. Do you think he's making a mistake reporting to her every time he's hit on? To me, that seems like she should assume, since
Agreed.
She's got a good-looking partner, that that happens. But to tell her each time seems like he's keeping her on alert.
Like, you're lucky to have me.
Yeah. We have two cultural little problems going on here. One, that people may not be totally clear about the expectation of monogamy. There's so much slippery slidey on that. And a lot of people feel like they cannot say, look, this is absolutely 100% what I need. And honestly, I'd say if the women who ask me for coaching, the first thing I say is, do you want monogamy? And they go, well, it's almost like it's too much to ask. You can ask for that. You can have that be an absolute red line. Like that is how it has to be, and not marry somebody who doesn't agree with that.
That's, so if she's not going to report this to management, because that's not her place,
no.
what is like a concrete thing that she could do?
She has to completely get the focus on herself, express her expectations about this, and make sure they're on the same page.
I would say that was my thought. You need to tell him how uncomfortable you are with this person. She mentions other married men have gotten into trouble with her. Like, you need to say,
You
know, I'm counting on you to not to.
Yeah. And for him, I agree. He should not be reporting it. That's not necessary. This is the other cultural slippery slidey that's been going on here, is that everybody's told like, oh, you have to tell each other everything. But actually, sometimes discretion is the right thing, because it can hurt people. It plants fear in their minds. So you don't have to do that.
Right.
If you've betrayed somebody, that's another question to be decided in a different context. But he hasn't. So he's just trying to tell her, look, it's fine. It's happening. So he doesn't need to do it knowing that it's hurting her. But that's a couples figure that stuff out.
When you are, imagine someone keeps coming back to you saying, today I was hit on when I bent over. And it's like, well, I assume that I married you. I really am into you. So obviously I expect that people, like, I value you. I imagine the world does.
Right.
You don't have to tell me every time someone says, hey, you're cute.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I get it. I also think you're cute.
Maybe that's it. What you just said is the expectation has to be concrete first before she can say, you already know that it's not okay for you to be with anybody else, so you don't need to tell me when someone likes you.
Right.
Yeah.
It actually makes me,
that.
Yeah. makes me feel so scared.
Well, put me on high alert. Like, wait, what's going on? Are you softening me for the big blow?
Yeah.
All right, let's check in with Studio 10.
She didn't say that he tells her every time somebody hits on him.
Sounds like
she says that. I thought it's the specific person that he works with. So maybe he's bringing it up because he himself doesn't know how to handle it.
No.
And I think your advice was spot on. She should share what she thinks, but maybe he needs her support in navigating how to talk to her and get her to stop.
Mm. I love that idea. They need to come together on it. But whatever she does, do not be that person. Because, when you go to somebody's work and try to interfere with their relationships there or their relationship to management, that's like, psycho person.
Right. It's a fine line between supportive and crazy.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. No, not cool.
My gut is to go into Trader Joe's, take a tomato and smash it and go, you better not talk to my husband.
Oh, just directly threaten
just
the woman.
Actually,
that's not a horrible idea.
if you have money, keep money in your pocket for the tomato.
Yeah, that's all you gotta buy.
Tomatoes are very pricey.
But it sounds like he's looking for some kind of validation too by telling her this all
the
time.
Aren't we all insecure and want to let everyone know what, you know, how worthy we are? Okay, next one. Ready? Mm-hmm. Don't say my name. Love you guys. I've listened for 20 plus years since I was in high school. Here's my situation. My husband and I have been together for like 13 years, married for 9. Over the years, we've had our ups and downs. Kids made things crazy hard. Mm-hmm. We have sought help and things are much better than they were, but we're still having some issues. My one kid, born in COVID, is neurospicy and is a year or two younger than Vinny's youngest. So I feel like I've learned so much hearing all his stories. My husband is also part of the same club as Vinny and Maddie. The alcoholic club. Yeah. And while he doesn't listen to the show, when I have it on and make him hear it, he always comments that he and Vinny must have been separated at birth. He's an amazing father, mostly a great guy, and tries hard. However, he is prone to being snappy and defensive when he's stressed, anxious, hungry, tired, and he sometimes says things that are sharp and even a bit mean. I try to not say anything. I kind of go small and just let it ride. He typically comes back later and apologizes, and we go on about our business. Recently, he said something about being sorry for being cranky the last few days, and I took the opportunity to kindly and shyly say, it's not really just the last couple of days. I kind of feel like it happens more often than not. He got really upset, not yelling, but that sort of defensive style. He got mad at me for waiting so long, continued to steer the conversation into something that felt like blame for me not doing something right to address this. I said, I often don't like to bring things up for this exact reason, that telling you just makes you upset. He deflects, sometimes brings up his own resentments, and then he has to run away to be alone to call his friends. This means that regardless of how busy we are or things needing to get done, he just abdicates, and I feel like it's not worth going through all of that just to share this with him, and his reactions sort of confirm it. My ultimate questions are, is there a better way I can be doing this? Do I just stay quiet about it and keep the peace? The reactions that occur now definitely don't make me feel like it's worth it, but I know if I don't say anything, it could create other and unanticipated issues. Loyal listener A.
Let's reset before you answer.
Yes. This is Anna Runkle joining us from her own show on YouTube, which is Crappy Childhood Fairy. And she's our guest advisor today.
Yeah. Well, this is such a normal problem in parenting, isn't it? But it sounds like he's getting emotionally dysregulated.
Oh.
Yeah. And so she's in this tough position of trying to like manage that, to manage this other thing.
A third kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To try to get him to act a certain way. And how do I do this? And how do I do this? And that's one of the signs, like you're starting to creep out of your zone of influence when you're trying to get somebody else to feel differently about how they're doing. So he didn't ask the question. So I always like want to respect that he didn't ask, but let's just give him some advice.
Okay.
You can regulate your emotions. And this is your nervous system actually getting overwhelmed real fast. That's what happens. I know it like the back of my hand. So something is stressful, like somebody's mad at you, a kid is yelling, you can't control the kids, nobody will go get in the car, all that stuff. It just escalates. It goes from 0 to 60 real fast. And so that you zero in on that problem is how can you regulate that process. And a lot of times what you do to deal with anger, it's not necessarily trying to like feel differently or be a new person. What you do is you say, I'm not going to drive a car or say things or make major decisions when I'm freaking out like this. And you have to know that you're doing it. You have to notice what are your signs that you're starting to escalate into those moments when you say things that you're going to regret later, that are going to cause an argument, that are going to make you feel like you want to run away or have a drink or start yelling. Those are all ways that we like escape that feeling of escalation inside.
So is there anything that she can do to help him reach that point?
Yes. So when you're dealing with a dysregulated person, what you want to do, her instinct is going to be to start saying, but this, but that, but this, and talk louder and faster and start coming up with a lot of requests or even demands or questions. And that's like, to a person who's dysregulated, that's like a scene from The Birds, of birds are just pecking your eyes out.
It's an attack. It's absolutely. Yeah. And
even though she's really just trying to solve her own problems.
Yeah. That is absolutely, I see that and feel that, no doubt.
Yeah. So what you want to do is back off a little bit, quiet down a little bit, soften your voice. Don't even touch the person. Do not make suggestions. Don't tell them anything to do. if you can establish in your relationship permission to say, it seems like things are escalating right now. Can we just slow it down? Do you need a few minutes? Do you want me to get the kids in the car and then you drive them?
That's interesting because she does talk about how she gets small and she shyly says this thing. But it's almost like rather than point out the thing that he definitely already knows he is doing, maybe just to help him see that there's another direction he can take in his own head.
Yeah.
But I hate to think that someone's got to suppress how they feel about someone else's behavior.
She doesn't have to suppress how she feels because that's her old reaction is like, I have to disappear now. I can't have any needs. But on a practical level, it's just like, oh, he's getting all dysregulated. So we have to deal with that right now. It's just like if somebody had the stomach flu, you would sort of like,
you'd pick up the slack on the other
pick
side.
Pick up the slack, and, right. Pause. But he can come back online. He can re-regulate.
Come back online.
It'd really help if he'd be willing to work on that a little bit. But he may not.
He does need to. I mean, yeah. For her sake, for their marriage's sake, I actually feel this one pretty closely. Yeah. And I do realize, like, I think he's having a mini crisis and you're not going to solve a problem in the middle of that. Like,
that's exactly
not where productivity is going to happen.
Right. Now, I used to take it very personally when my husband would go, you're just freaking out. He has my permission now to say, seems like maybe you're getting dysregulated. Can we take 5 minutes?
Taking 5 minutes is actually, you know, now you got 5 minutes. You can breathe. You can think on it. It's I know another couple who says whenever they start to feel like they're getting into an argument, they take a 5 minute break. Okay, hold on. Let's take a 5 minute break. And I wonder if that's sort of from the same school.
You have an obligation to use the 5 minutes to use your tools. So I teach people like emergency measures to re-regulate. You can stomp your feet saying right, left, right, left. You got to talk to your nervous system. Like, this is not like a big emotional problem. It's just your system for governing your emotions and your cortisol and your heart rate. They're just kind of like going all over the place.
About to go haywire, right?
So you just got to like deal with that right now. Just bring it back. So you move the right side and the left side. You maybe sit down hard in a chair and go, there's all my weight in the chair. Or wash your hands in cold ice water or hot water or both. Just give yourself a sensation. But just put all your attention on bringing yourself kind of back here now, right inside yourself, and back into a promise that even though I feel this way right now, I'm not going to say the things. There's this perception like, it's so urgent, I have to say how terrible this is for me. But when you think it's urgent, unless you're actually in physical danger, that's your cue like, no, wait. If you say this half an hour from now, it's going to be a lot more effective. The other person can hear it. It's not going to be like 100 things. It's going to be the one thing that you needed to express.
All right. Anna Runkle is sitting in with us this morning. I want to turn it to Studio 10 over there.
I feel this one a lot. One, as I know, you know, with sobriety, especially early in sobriety, you are all over the place. Like you snap for no reason. You know, you're resentful because you can't drink. And there's all kinds of things. But I've also been on the other side where I was with someone married who was snapped at me all the time. And I never knew when to, like, and if I brought it up, it was never an apology. It was always just deal with it kind of deal. And then I quit talking. And then she quit talking. And that was the disaster. Like, when neither people were addressing the issue and it's just like you're just simmering and stewing on it, it will build up and it will come out and it won't be good. So at least they're talking so a little bit. So I think that's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Yeah, I agree with what everyone's saying. I love the taking a moment when I feel myself getting stressed and I might say something that I will regret. I say, you know what? I can't talk about this right now. And you circle back to it later.
Yeah. I like the give it five. Like, I'm not trying to just completely shut this down.
Right.
I need a couple minutes. Please give me five. Let's take 5 minutes. So I can think on this, calm myself down.
Maybe check in with yourself. Do you need a snack? Have you had any water today? Do you need a nap? Is there something you've been avoiding dealing with?
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But you must come back.
You must.
In your relationship, if you use the 5 minutes or any kind of running away, what you're doing is triggering abandonment in other people. And this is what kills relationships is both the disappearing. I'm not going to express myself at all.
And that's what he's doing. He's disappearing after every fight they have.
Yeah. And then she feels like she has to in her way too. So that's death, right? You don't want to do that. But you can't, if you can process this stuff all by yourself and come back together, you must come back. You make a promise. I'll come back to you. If I need more time, I'll tell you and ask for 5 more minutes or half an hour. And then you come back and you say, I really want to have this conversation. I really do want to talk about it. I don't want to leave you feeling like I don't care, but I just need a minute to pull myself together. This changes everything. Abandonment cannot be used as a weapon.
You're a very smart lady. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Anna Runkle, you can find her at Crappy Childhood Fairy at YouTube. And I assume in other ways as well, but start there on YouTube. You were a very fun guest to have on today. I hope that your struggles going forward versus the California Department.
I'm suing them now. Good. I'm the plaintiff now. So, hey, it's a whole different thing.
Well, all right. Hope it goes well.
And yeah.
I just want to say the Pacific Legal Foundation are like the Jedi. They are one of the nation's biggest constitutional rights firms. And that's what they do, is they defend people from overreach by the government. And they're incredible.
And that's where you turned.
And they're doing this for free for me. Donors pay them.
Oh,
they're doing
great.
This for free. I would never be able to afford
a
major federal case to sue the government. My gosh. I'm very grateful to them.
Anna Runkle, everybody. Thank you so much for being on today. And thank you for writing in with your bad advices.
Hey, Bay Area, good morning.
Coffee, please.
Wake up with Sarah and Vinny.
This is amazing!
Ah! Every morning on Alice.
97.3. Alice, 97.3. Sarah and Vinny, Alice's morning show. Ran a little late with bad advice, but thanks again to Anna Runkle, who made a guest appearance in here. We're going to get right to the news.
What's up, everyone? This Alice Report is brought to you by Uncle Credit Union. Summer plans adding up? The Uncle Credit Union personal loan can help you. With rates as low as 9.99% APR, learn more at unclecu.org. That's unclecu.org. Uncle Credit Union wants to help you out.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, let them help you out.
Sure.
Help you out.
A little gas money.
Right.
Help us out. Help us out.
Right. Okay, here's some stuff we'll run through real quick. Toy Story 5 comes out this weekend. The reviews are very
good.
I don't think I'll get there this weekend, but I plan to see that in the next couple weeks.
Well, with kids your kid's age, I'm not surprised.
It's going to be a lot
incredible.
Of fun.
Incredible.
Our cousin is playing in the U.S. Open.
That's right. Tucker's in the Seniors Open that starts next week.
World Cup action continues to be super fun, and USA has a game today. USA versus Australia. At noon.
Good eye, mate.
Go America.
F yeah.
At Levi's tonight, 8 o'clock, Turkey versus Paraguay. And we already beat, that was our first win, was versus Paraguay, I believe. So that is, hopefully Paraguay wins and then our win looks even better.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we got them and then they got Turkey. And so, World Cup. Yay. It's fun. I mean,
I believe you.
You're not enjoying it.
Yeah, I don't care about
Will
that.
You watch?
No.
Wait, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Is your cousins going to be on TV?
Yeah. So the
Senior Open, US Open
is apparently
also
plays on
TV.
Yeah. I'm sure it's on some obscure ESPN channel or whatever.
Well, that's fine. I mean, let's see our cousin play some golf.
Tucker Sampson, everybody. Very excited for him.
I am too.
It's a
good
big
stuff.
Deal.
Wow, it's on NBC, Golf Channel, and Peacock.
Oh, goodness. Well, listen, they're not going to feature every golfer. There's a lot of golfers, and, you know, I think they eliminate a lot of the pack as each day goes by, right?
Well, look, I'll get on the request line and request more coverage of
Tucker Sampson.
Tucker Sampson. Mm-hmm.
I'm just really psyched for him. I can't wait. I'll definitely be watching, trying to catch John in the crowd, you know.
Oh, so he's for sure.
I think he's going to try and go. Yeah, he wants to go. And he doesn't want to go too late in the thing because he's afraid that Tucker will have been eliminated by then. You know, he's looking at he just wants to make sure he sees him.
I agree with him. That is it's his first big tourney. Like,
I have no idea if it's his first
I'm
big
sure tourney. He's played a lot right. Because you said he played in college, right?
He has always played. So
yeah,
he's
probably, I mean, to be as good as he is. But now, like the senior
I know.
Tour dude.
So just so we're correct on this, the senior tour is not held at the same place as the Open. The Open is in Long Island. This one's in Scioto Country Club in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay. So what does that mean?
That it's in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. So because this is the senior Open.
Yes, the senior Open.
Oh, okay.
What's the difference?
I
don't understand. It doesn't really matter. As long as it's going to be on TV, I'll get to watch it.
We've talked about this before. My first story is... I'm a washcloth guy.
Yes.
I was brought up a washcloth guy.
Yeah.
I get in the shower, I soap up a washcloth, and I wash myself every from head to toe with a soapy washcloth. Behind the ears, all the stuff.
All the good for you.
Everything.
That is, you're so clean.
Well, I try to be. I actually like that moment where I walk out of there and go, I'm good. Right now, every part of me has just been dialed clean.
Fantastic.
You know, 2 minutes later, I might be like, well, I'm already sweaty. You know, depends on whatever is happening. Here's what you should know if you use your hands to clean your body in the shower.
God, he's really all over me trying to get me to.
No.
Do we all, none of
listen
us use
to me
a washcloth?
And let
I already
me finish
wrote down
with the story.
For the notes that he's sharing propaganda.
Okay.
For his own agenda.
Good. Thank you. I'll continue with your agenda.
Washcloths and loofahs are commonplace items in bathrooms, hotels, and even gyms. They can help you feel like you're getting a deep clean and can easily spread soap suds all over your body. Dermatologists have spoken and say, washcloths and loofahs aren't necessary.
Mm. Propaganda for our side.
Yes! The truth.
Or even the best way to get clean.
Oh, what's the best way?
Your hands.
Oh.
Your hands and soap. Dermatologists favor washing with the hand over a washcloth versus, say, a loofah.
They sometimes I gotta get my back. I gotta just like loofah the hell out of my back.
As an across-the-board recommendation, dermatologists say, wash with your hands.
Okay.
One of the things they say is, and I always assumed, first of all, I always think things got to kind of hurt if they're going to work.
Oh, so, yeah, you know, you're that guy.
You know, I mean, it's got to taste terrible if it's going to work. It's got to
burn my throat going down. I feel you. Yeah.
It's just my way. Maybe I should call the crappy childhood fairy.
And find out
and
why.
Find out what happened to me that I needed to be painful.
Mm.
Anyway, most dermatologists would favor washing with the hand over washcloths and loofahs. They say you can absolutely harm your skin by scrubbing too hard. You're way better off using just your hands. So the two of you with your framing me and saying I'm propagandizing, I'm not. I'm saying dermatologists agree with you.
Mm. I love dermatologists. I should go see one someday.
I also thought that was kind of part of the whole, what do they call that? Exfoliating is that hard scrub really is good for your skin, but they're saying it's not necessary on a daily basis.
I was just going to say, I'll bet you that is good for you once in a while, because there are definitely times when I'm like, I just feel like I need a scrub. And so I do that. And I have one of those plastic poofs in there. I love those. They foam up so nice, but I really feel like I'm getting all the, you know, whatever off of me.
While we're in your bathroom, I have one more story for you, Tide. This is a separate story, but many of us, you use a bath towel after you shower, and what do you do with it?
Hang it up
to reuse it.
To let it dry and reuse it.
So many people will hang their towel up on a hook. You see that hook?
That is not how you do it.
That is not how you do it.
No, if you hang it like that, the folds are touching, it doesn't dry right, and it can actually start to smell bad. You need to hook, I have two hooks, and I put my towel across them because I don't have another place to hang, but John uses the actual towel rack where he spreads it out nice and even.
Towels should be hung on a bar or hook so that air can circulate across the entire surface. So for every one of us that thinks we're doing less laundry and it's no big deal, you were clean when you dried off. I mean, I was just out of the shower. The towel's not dirty. If you hang it on a hook, It isn't clean.
And it's, now you're talking about hanging on a hook where it's draping down in a triangle. Right. So it, I used the two hooks, so it's basically spread
and
out.
Put it
and,
around.
But it's like a towel bar would act as. And I am here to say I take a shower every day, pretty much, not necessarily on the weekend. And I use the same towel for 1 week.
I
hang
also,
it and dry it. And I've beat it into my kids' heads. If you leave your towel in a heap on the floor, now I have to wash it.
Folding or bunching towels before hanging traps moisture, which causes mildew.
And sometimes you can't even get rid of that smell.
Some right.
Towels are gross. If you've got to just treat the, it takes 2 seconds to hang your towel up.
They also say,
I feel like such a mom right now.
Take 2 seconds to shake it. They say, give a towel a quick shake before hanging it. It separates the fibers so the towels can dry more evenly. There you go, everybody.
I like it. Wow. I'm really feeling like a lot of my common practices are getting backed up today, Vinny. I don't know if we've got time for, I guess we could squeeze in a
Our
couple of
snacks. Our text number is 800-400-3697, and Maddie's on the show.
Well, this is an important text.
Okay.
It said, John, 95, says, John should be Tucker's caddy. Imagine two guys that have made out with Sarah on television together.
Yeah. Turns out caddy is a pretty big job when you're in the senior open, and he has a caddy that he works with.
So John can't be...
He can't be his caddy, but he was saying that John
No,
can,
loyalty, Tucker. What's with you?
He's got a professional caddy. Apparently, John was telling me, I was like, what the hell? It's just, you know, doesn't he ask for a club and you hand it to him? He goes, well, there's like calculations. I know I get a solid 210 with this thing and this is a 500 foot.
You do see them out there with yard. Their pencil and
I know.
Paper and also
do
like.
Because they play the course a couple days in a row before the actual competition begins. And John said that Tucker goes, you could come with me. You could go on that run. You know, obviously you're not playing and you're not truly caddying. Yes, Vinny, your hands up.
Could John like hold a sandwich and put it into his mouth for bites?
And then maybe like squirt Gatorade into his mouth.
Could he do that?
I'm hoping.
Okay, that
I
sounds
certainly
fun.
Hope so. He could probably do that for the caddy too.
Hey, Tucky, take a bite of your Sammy.
Now, come on, Def, wash it down with a little bit of
spot
Gatorade.
The sides of his mouth.
Oh,
there's
yes,
a little mayo
oh,
there.
Let's get you.
Oh, this is going to be so fun.
Up. Yeah.
I hope we get video of that.
That would be really fun.
It would be fun. Mm. So no.
I definitely no idea. Vinny.
All right.
I don't really.
Worth a shot.
Can't really tell.
What's coming up
what
in the trash
do.
Then, Sarah?
I found in my long life. The best, worst, and hottest fathers for Father's Day.
Wake up with good vibes and variety.
Oh my God, that's brilliant. We got to do that.
Sarah and Vinny.
Alice, 97.3.